Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Before get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com and listen to the live stream there. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and listen to the live stream from there. Or you can download the TuneIn app on many of your devices. TuneIn is a free app. Just download TuneIn, and in the TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening, and you'll see the icon to listen to the program, the live stream, on any of your devices, even stream it live into your car. That's Time for Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. On that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. And there you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that fan page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And also, Time for Awakening Media has been launched. Time for Awakening Media, that ought to be one of your favorites. Just put that in your address bar, timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforawakening.com. It'll take you straight to Time for Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting content, articles, blogs, podcasts of the programs that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're scheduled to have a special guest join us to talk about his life at the Doja School for Boys. He's written a book, They Told Me Not to Tell. Talks about the rapes, murders, and peonage that went on at the Doja School for Boys. Our special guest this evening is Reverend Johnny Lee Gaddy to talk about his experience there before his life, before he got there, the period of time that he spent there at that school, and some of his mission afterwards. We'll talk with Reverend Gaddy after we come back and open the program. After a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Not a All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our special guest this evening, this Friday evening here in the city of Philadelphia, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African-American Museum here in Philadelphia. Brother Richard is with us on the line. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Brother Allen?
I'm doing all right this evening, Richard. It's a little overcast. I think it's supposed to rain today, and later on this evening and tomorrow here in Philadelphia, so it'll be a wet Saturday. But other than that, things is going pretty good, man. How you feeling this evening?
Yeah, I'm feeling better. You know, I'm still waiting. I have to say, I'm one of them warm weather person. So, you know, we're in May, and it's getting close to the middle of May, and I'm like, definitely waiting to hit this 70 on a consistent basis compared to whatever is going on now in Philadelphia. And I know the audience has been hearing us go back and forth about the temperature going up and down, but I'm definitely looking forward to get warmer, but also looking forward to have this conversation with Reverend Gaddy about this, those here, school for boys, and just the whole thing of youth and incarceration and some things we kind of been touching on in other areas around this incident that he wrote his book about.
Yeah, you know, it should be an interesting conversation. I was unaware, to be honest, of that incident that happened, or the series of incidents that happened down there at that school and in Florida during this period of time and before. One of our guests that was on, Miss Arella, was on with us about a month and a half ago, I think, Richard, maybe 2 months.
Yeah.
And she told us about her work on that project down there with some of the archaeologists, DNA specialists, and her work with Reverend Gaddy on his experience there at the Dozier School for Boys when they unearthed all these shallow graves and unmarked graves of a lot of the young men that were there. It should be an interesting story, and we'll be talking about that with our special guest this evening. His book. They Told Me Not to Tell. Our special guest this evening is Reverend Johnny Lee Gaddy. Reverend Gaddy, how are you, sir?
Truly blessed, sir. How about you?
Good, good, sir.
I'm about to send some of the heat up that way.
Hey, Reverend Gaddy, I'll be glad to take some of that off your hands.
Yeah, I spoke with Reverend Gaddy earlier this afternoon, and he told me he was out there fishing. I said, man, you. I'm glad to have you with us, sir, to talk about your experiences there. Myself and Brother Richard on Time for Awakening, we're glad to have you here. And, you know, I said in the beginning that the atrocities that happened down there at Dozier School for Boys, I was totally unaware of until our guest a couple of months ago, Miss Antoinette Harrell, was on with us to talk about genealogy. And she talked about her work down there in Florida dealing with the atrocities that happened, teaming up with DNA specialists and archaeologists. Her work in genealogy kind of teamed with those men to try to discover some of the unmarked graves and the people that were there. And she told us about you and reached out to you to have you on the program. Your book, They Told Me Not to Tell, kind of talks about your experiences there at Dozier School for Boys. Before we get into that and your experience at the school, or I guess that's mildly putting it, saying at the school, because I don't know whether any much learning was going on there. But let's talk about Reverend Gaddy. Talk about yourself as a boy leading up to the time that you went to Dozier.
Well, at the time of a boy, I was 11 years old. And I was having a lot of problems going to school because I studied as a kid, and children used to pick at me, so I didn't like going to school, so I played hooky from school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really led me to the school. And because, God told my mother I was going to see the judge. And he picked me up at 6 o'clock in the evening. I told my mother, because she knew I would run in a minute. And she told me, don't run. Just go see what the judge got to say. So I got in the car with him, and I went on, and I was trying to tell my mom, no judge be in no jailhouse at no 6 o'clock in the evening. He said, well, go ahead and see what he want to say. So I went on up there, and he put me in a cell. He said, wait here. The judge will be down in a minute to see you. So he waited so long, I fell asleep. And I didn't know anything. It was the next morning. He said, let's go. I said, where I'm going? He said, nigga, you're on your way to Mariana. I said, Mariana? He said, yeah. So I said, you going to tell my mama? He said, well, somebody will tell her. You won't tell her because you're going with me. So he put me in the car, and he took me on to Mariana. And when I got there, we had to take a series of shots and everything.
Reverend Gaddy, because I might break in on you sometime because I want to get a little background. Let's go back. You mentioned about your difficulty in school and with stuttering and the children laughing. So you played hooky. Now, I'm quite sure that your mom probably didn't know you was playing hooky. Was your dad around?
My dad had passed.
Okay, all right. So, okay, go ahead. Now, so your dad wasn't around, but I'm quite sure your mother didn't know you was playing hooky. So when the people appeared, not during the daytime, but at your house at 6 in the evening, was she afraid? Especially when probably wasn't one officer, two, three, or how many people appeared at her house at 6 in the evening?
It was just one.
Okay, I know she was a little. Was she a little put off sending you with this band by yourself?
Not really.
Okay.
Because she kind of, my mama was kind of easy going.
Okay.
And so she told me, because she knew I was going to run. I'll run in a minute.
All right.
And but she persuaded me to go on with him because he had a lot of faith in the officer.
Okay.
Because in the town that I lived in was Dade City, so we know most of all the police is there. He was a city police, but we lived in the country, so I was surprised he come out there and pick me up.
Okay.
And that's when he took me to the Doja school, but my father had passed, and my mother, it was 13 of us.
Oh, okay. All right.
We were like, they told me we was a ward of the state, because my mama got some government help. So if they needed somebody, they'd just come out there. Because my brother had been to jail a couple of times because he looked like somebody. And they used to tell us we all look alike. So if they can catch the guy they were looking for, they just pick up one of my brothers and take them to jail. But they took me to Marana.
If I may ask, Reverend Gaddy, what year was this when they came to you, to your house?
In 57.
57.
Now, they automatically deemed you. Oh, I'm sorry, Richard. Go ahead.
No, that's it.
They automatically deemed you, Reverend Gaddy, as a ward of the state because your mother got assistance because your father had passed.
Right.
Okay. Now, you said that you arrived at Doja. Go ahead. Right. Go ahead.
I arrived at Doja. It was a beautiful place on the going in to register. We had to go to register and take a series of shots. But after we got all that taken care of, they transferred what you call the South Camp, which was the black side. It was segregated at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that if you walked by a white guy, you had to look down. You couldn't speak to him. He couldn't speak to you.
Oh, you're talking about some of the white boys on the campus?
Right.
Okay.
It was two sides. The south side was the black. North side was the white.
Okay.
He took me on the black side. And they give me clothes and shoes, and they assign me to a job, which was a farm crew. Most of all the guys, everything that we ate, raised, it come from the black side. I tell people all the time, the white guys never had to do the farm work. We always had to do the farm work, the labor, and I ain't never heard no new ground until I got there. Where we would have to go in the swamp and tie chains to stumps and pull them out by tractors. And we'd plant corn and beans and peas, watermelon, every kind of every vegetable or fruit that you can name, we growed it on that place.
Now, how long did you spend at Doja in total? You went there in 57.
Right. I spent 5 years.
5 years. No, Reverend Gaddy, help me with this. You went there for truancy, which is, you know, sometimes they will come out and talk to your parents, and then you go back to school. Or maybe I'm just relating it to my time, not yours. You might be suspended from school for a couple of days, but then your parents bring you back. How do you end up without due, so-called due process? End up in a basic peonage camp for 5 years. Talk about that before you go back into your story at Doja. Was it ever any explanation of why you didn't get quote unquote due process?
No, like I said, my mother didn't understand the law, and we didn't either.
Okay, all right.
Because my mama didn't even know how to read or write.
Okay. All right.
Whatever, he kind of agreed with it. Because I was up there 5 years and I had no family members to even come to visit me.
Did they know where you were? Or you not even sure? Well, I guess after you got out, you talked with a lot of your family. Did they ever know where you were?
They knew where I was at. They told them, my mama said they told us it's better that I didn't come see him. He come see me.
Okay.
And if I may add, if I understand it right, Reverend Gaddy, Dozier is a state-run school or industrial school for boys. Am I right? A reform school for boys. It was a state. It's a state-run school.
Right.
So when you say Elliot about. And Reverend Gaddy, when you say that the farm work that y'all were doing and whatever, these were activities the state was doing. And am I right to say that the work that you did, the crops that you grown, even though you the school ate some, it was sold, or it was for some company?
Well, we didn't never get into anything like that because when I did find out what was going on with Ms. Arrell, we was into the archives, but we noticed the truck comes into the place and take the food out and whatever they did with it. We didn't try to get involved in that because we know the punishment for being a little nosy around that campus. And that's what you didn't want to get caught doing, being nosy, wonder what they're doing with this or what they're doing with that. You were just trying to be nice and get out of there.
So you never really found out about the hundreds of thousands of dollars they were making off the slave labor of young children until, I guess, Ms. Arrell was working with you maybe, 3 to 5 years ago?
Yes.
Okay, so all right, wow. Reverend Gaddy, let's go ahead.
Room for education.
Yeah, because I was going to mention that they called it Dozier School for Boys, but it didn't seem like it was much learning or educating going on there.
Not for black.
Okay. Let's go back. Now, you were 11 when you went. What was the average age for the young black boys at Dozier?
We had some there at 5, 7.
Wait a minute, Reverend Gaddy, go a little slower for me. You said it was young boys there as young as 5 to 7 years old?
A black boy.
Go ahead.
They was in my cottage, and a lot of them was out there in the fields with me. See, we had most of the black guys, they either worked on a dairy, cattle, a king, they picked it, harvested it, and we growed it, and we had the stall. I had a boy on my crew, he was about 5, and we had, back in the day, we had them old two-hand saw, and I pulled, and he's supposed to pull, but he was so small, to keep him from getting a spanking, I did most of his work. Because I know he couldn't have stood under no spanking. And what we call a spanking, it wasn't just a hand clap. A spanking up there is being taken half of your body off you, being whooped so bad you had to carry a pillow for about 3 weeks just to sit down.
That's what I was going to ask you. When you termed a spanking, I'm quite sure you've seen a lot of things going on there. Did they have a whip? I mean, what did they use on some of the young boys up there at that place?
They had a belt about 4 foot long, and they had three. One had holes in it, and the one had holes in it, and when it hit you, it would suck the skin from your body. And it had one that's narrow. When he hit you, he cut into your flesh. and he had one that hit you and it almost paralyzed your whole behind. It numbs your whole behind from the licks. And they make joke about it, how many licks before I make him bleed and all kind of stupid stuff like that.
Reverend Gaddy, was it the same person that that was able to do this kind of corporal punishment, or was it different people?
Well, it's only two. When I was there, there's a white guy with a one arm, they call him Tidwell, and then there's a black guy, his name was Mr. Marvin, and Mr. Marvin, I always felt like he looked like he weighed about 300 pounds, but I was just a kid. I kind of, I don't know whether he was that big or he just had that much fear in me and made him think he was that big. I never seen him after I left the place. I never seen any pictures of the place.
And you say that they use this kind of strap, these different types of straps to, so you were, was it a room that you were in? What did you have to do in order to get, not what you had to do, but what was the room like that you were in to, where you got this?
I got a spanking for boy busted two tires because I ain't got big enough to drive a tractor, so. He bust all the trailer tires, and he told the boss man that I was going to, crew instructor, that I did it. And I told him that he had said he was going to do it, so both of us had to ride. When I mean ride, they come by your job and pick you up in a blue Ford. I want to say it was a 55 Ford. It was new. And take you to the White House. The White House was a little... The building was yellow, but they called it the White House, and we had one single bed in the White House. And when you go there, you had to lay down on your stomach, and he'd take your pants, because we had to wear our shirt in, so we'd take our shirt out of our pants. And he had a notch on the wall. He would tell you to look at that notch on the wall. And he said, don't turn that bed loose. You couldn't turn it loose when he was spanking. If you turn it loose, he said, some boys have lost their life because I hit them between the balls and I killed them. So you don't want to turn that bed loose. So when I got on there, the man hit me so hard, I called Mama, God, and I called everybody I could think of. And nobody came, man. He hit me about 20 licks, and my behind was so numb. And I was, my back, he hit me all up in my back. Blood was everywhere. And I asked him, I said, can I go to the hospital? He said, no, y'all having dinner at the cafeteria. He said, can I go and change my clothes? He said, no, I want them boys to see you just like this. And let them know we ain't playing with you boys. And so I had to go in the cafeteria, the whole blood running down my leg, and that's where he told me to go eat like that. That's how cruel it was.
And I have to reemphasize, Elliot, that it sounds like it was, Reverend Gaddy was in a state-sponsored institution. And I take it the men and women that were working there were state employees.
They was. They one that we had to call them our college father. They was over the college at night, and the crew instructor was over the job in the day.
And the reason why I like the listening audience, to be clear of this, because, you know, now today we talk about the prison industrial complex and the relationship between the prisons and the companies that prisoners go to. I haven't really heard as Reverend Gaddy's story is telling us, does the same thing occur now as then around with the youth correction facilities? But we do know that there's a relationship between people who go to prison and doing work. And Reverend Gaddy, you're just implying, as you said, y'all wasn't even concerned whether what would the work that you, the crops that you produce, where it was going because of the condition. It was just to be focused on what you were doing, and it's understandable. But we see today, we know that companies actually contract with the state to do this kind of work that you're kind of talking about that was occurring at Marianna, in Marianna in the 50s when you were there.
Yes, no. But see, during the experience that I had endured, I had seen boys' body parts, and that really had me all shook up. Because I used to take trash to be burned at the pit. And I seen boy's hand in the pit. And the boy told me, Johnny, don't tell nobody what you seen, because you'll be in this pit. So I didn't talk about it. So I used to go to the cafeteria and pick up food from the cafeteria. And I saw a boy put in the hog pen, in the hog slot, because all our food that we fed the hog with, they had to recook it. Some of it was already cooked, but everything had to be cooked again before they gave it to the hog. And I said, man, these people's up here cooking these boys and feeding them to the hog and burn them in the pit. Because a hog will eat anything. He eat everything. And that's what, and the boy said, John, let me tell you, man, you ain't seen nothing yet. You better be quiet. Don't ever mention it. Because I did mention something that happened to me, and I like to got beat to death up there. Because it took me out to town and have a guy molest me. And I come back and told my college father what had happened. And, oh, God, I never said nothing about anything else again. Well, so they kind of had my spirit broke pretty good.
Wait a minute, Reverend Gaddy. You said that they took you to town.
Yes, sir.
And had somebody molest you.
Right.
You mentioned...
Kind of hard to mention that. My wife didn't know it. I've been with her almost 50 years. And I ain't never mentioned nothing about the school at all, but she kind of say, I kind of felt something was wrong. And I didn't never tell nobody but Mr. Ray about what had happened at school. I was too embarrassed to say anything.
I understand.
Yes, it is.
Reverend Gaddy, I mean, as much as you can talk about it, I don't, you know, I want you to feel comfortable, you know, talking with our listening audience and with us, because this is a Black Talk station, and we deal with a lot of things, historical and issues that are important to our community that we need to know about. And I think this story that went on, it didn't go on in the 1800s. It didn't go on in the 1700s. This went on 1957, which is in a normal person's lifetime, that these things were going on in Florida. You know, it only stands to reason and only bolsters cases that our people, and I'm not even talking about the years, the centuries that we spent in chattel enslavement. These type of things only bolsters that our people need reparations in this country for stuff that was done, state-sponsored stuff that was done to our people. And we're talking about stories now of things that were done to young children, boys, some as young as 5 to 7 years old were there at this place with our guest, Reverend Gaddy. Reverend Gaddy, go back. You talked about when you went out to dump trash, you would see body parts. Now, all of the young black boys that was in this certain area where they kept black boys at this this peonage camp, I won't even call it Dozier School, this peonage camp, did all of you guys know one another, or were so many boys you really didn't know everybody there?
Well, we had different cottages that we lived in. And the cottage was so, I went back 50 years later.
Okay.
This rare happened. Come back 50 years later, I went back to visit the campus.
Was it difficult for you to go? And I'm a cut in sometime, so just excuse me. Was it difficult for you to go back there with Miss Earl?
It was very difficult, but I'm kind of glad I did go back.
Okay.
Because when we got back, the white side was looked like it never, nobody never lived in it. But the black side was all growing up, swamps and big trees, and that's where they were finding the boy's body. Under, some of them was under the trees, and I mean, the cottage was all run down. And I say, because all our college named after black leaders, like Bethune, Robinson, Lee, Carver, Mack Lane, Bunch, all our cottages were named after black leaders. And but them building was all tore up, run down, growed up. And I said, well, how our side was so well kept. And as kids, and now it's all run down, and the white side is still just like it was.
So when you, Reverend Gaddy, so when you initially came up to on the campus, as you said earlier, you were come in basically through the white side. Am I correct in that?
Right.
And are you saying that even as you went back 50 years later, the way the white side, the side that was white, still looked like the same way it looked when you first went there?
Almost exactly like it was when I first went there. Only thing was missing there was the pine trees.
But on the black side, it was as if no one ever was there. And where all the crops were grown and where the African-American children were working and producing, and that now 50 years later, it looked like with the dorms and whatever, like nobody even existed there.
Right, like the swamp, all the big trees and vine and everything. I couldn't even hardly recognize I was even on that place, and it was so well kept when I was a kid, because on Saturday, if we did something bad, we had to get on our floor and clean that wooden floor. So the building was so well kept. I was amazed why that building, how outside is run down so bad.
And it's on that side where there these bodies or skeletons were found of people who were possibly who had either killed or died, and nobody knew that they even were dead.
Well, if they did, they didn't claim them, because all the bodies that they dug was black boys. I think they say they found one white, but back in the days, wasn't no white gonna be buried with no black.
Reverend Gaddy, the that campus, for lack of a better term, I think on one published report I read was 1,200 acres. What are some of the crops that they had you guys dealing with down there? I would assume down in Florida, in the South, you had cotton. Talk about some of the things that the young boys was harvesting. Like they were grown men.
Peas, beans, corn. We had sugar cane. We made our own sugar. See, we had our own dairy. We had our own cattle. We had our own hog. We had our own rabbits. We had everything that you can name. The black took care of it. We raised it from our hands. Everything we ate, everything the white guys ate, we raised it. Some of the guys I know, they call themselves the White House Boys, and they got certificates. I seen them show me a certificate. We didn't get anything back then. But every kind of food you can think of, I didn't ever see no cotton or nothing
okay.
like that.
Okay.
But we had a sawmill where after we cut them stumps down and them logs, we would go out there to haul it to the sawmill. They make lumber, and I don't know what they're doing. I know they had to be selling the lumber because everything on the cottage was built, and we turned out a lot of lumber every day. But like I said, the black boy, you didn't want to get too into what was going on.
Now, the lumber, because, and you just expressed that a lot of the swamp had taken over a lot of the school area. So I assume that on that campus, it was huge swamp areas. Is this where a lot of the lumber was being pulled from?
Right. That's what I was telling you about new ground.
Okay.
Never heard no new ground till I got there. And my boss man, he's a black guy. His name was Mr. Shazen. And me and him was riding back to the cottage. He said, Johnny, I'm going to plant that field in 2 months with corn. And I'm looking at this man and saying, I couldn't say nothing. But I said, this man got to be crazy. He talking about a swamp. Man, that man had us out there in that water, them snakes and alligators, and it was cold. And them boys wasn't used to it, ain't never left the house. And when they get cold like that in the water, and they run up to that fire, and that's the wrong thing you should do when you're cold like that, to heat yourself and without backing off of it. Man, they get frostbitten, and them little kids just be hollering. Oh, God, I can hear them kids hollering. Man, it hurts so bad, I try to tell them, man, back away from that fire. And I'm cold. I said, you wait till that pain start hitting, you're going to wish you would have listened. And that's what happened when you get frostbitten, man, it hurts so bad. But we all had to learn the hard way. Anybody tried to teach us nothing, then if you didn't do what they say, you were going to get a spanking. And a spanking is something you didn't never want.
So he showed you a swamp area and said, in 2 months, I'm going to have corn planted in a field here. And he made you, the children there, clear that swamp.
We did.
Did you see any of the young boys attack by alligators or snakes or anything of that nature?
A whole lot of them be bit. And some of them lived, and I don't know, some of them they tell us they had to take them home to their parents. We know them boys died. They didn't tell you they died, but we know they did.
So when they were attacked by alligators, for example, they tell you guys they taken them to a hospital, but you don't think they ever made it there?
We know they didn't make it there.
Or when you had other industrial accidents from the sawmills, when you spoke about the hand that you seen that was fed to the hogs, that possibly could have got cut off in doing the cutting, and then just thrown in, and it makes me wrench to even think that thrown in, cooked, and then fed to the hogs as food to. Just to get rid of the evidence.
Well, see, that hog will eat anything. He eat the bone. It'll cook anything. And they have it so hot, man. You can't hardly stand to throw trash in it. Whenever they want, they don't want you looking through that trash when they tell you to take it to the pit. And a lot of it would be old corn chuck and everything like that.
So that could have been, just speculating, that could have been a place where they made sure that they would dispose of bodies.
Well, it could have. I know it was, because if we had a runaway, they'd go to the prison. One thing I didn't mention to you, they was preparing us for prison. That's what the first thing that guy told me, and it stick to me to this day. He said, "Johnny, you know what we preparing y'all Negroes for?" He didn't say Negroes. He said, that was a kind word.
Mm-hmm.
"We preparing y'all for prison." I said, "Preparing us for prison?" He said, "Yep. You niggas leave here and y'all going to prison." And I guess I stayed so long as I didn't really need to go to prison, but I talked to a lot of black guys, still talking to them. And every one of them guys left that place and went to prison.
And that reinforces that for us here in this town, we talk about that, as we said, Elliot, the school, the prison pipeline,
mm-hmm.
and we get to see that this is this, you know, though we, you know, talk about it like it's something just now, when we have this intergenerational dialogue, we get to see that this is something, and again, as you said, something that is a part of the state process. You know, it's more visible when we're looking at Mariana and looking at the Dosa School for Boys. But, when you know, it's not for people like Reverend Gaddy. It's not some theoretical or hypothetical. This is an experience. And then we also hear how the communication and stuff. Reverend Gaddy, I have to ask. So, and it touches on the question that Elliot asked, like, did most of the boys that went to Dosa, were they, were there other boys from your county, your area that was there, or did they come from other areas in Florida?
Came from all over Florida. It was only about two guys that was from my area. I live in right out of Tampa. But we call, where I live at, it was Pasco County, a place called Dade City. And it's a little small town. And I only was a couple of guys from my hometown. Or we used to call them homeboys. A lot of guys are from Miami, Jacksonville, all over the state of Florida was there.
So they were rounding up boys from all over in these counties and all over Florida, and bringing them here, bringing them to this place in order to provide this kind of labor and abuse on young black males. Were there females there?
At one time, but they take them to a place called Ocala, a school called Lower. I think it's Lower. But they had another boys' school up there in Okeechobee, Florida. And the same guys that was over, Mariana was over that school. Those guys was abused there also.
Reverend Gaddy, how often were they bringing young boys to the school? If you had a lot of young boys getting hurt, getting attacked by wildlife, getting severely beaten or even running away, how often were they bringing young boys to that school, to that prison farm?
Every day.
Every day.
Every day. It was coming in every day. They tell us some of them left. The parents come and got them. It was a setup. We know that any time a boy left, he was misbehaving. We know his parents didn't come and get him. We know they probably did terrible stuff to him.
And we see that later on, somewhere around, 2013, the University of Southern Florida, when you were talking about the deaths that or bodies that you've seen, they did some excavation, and they also were discovering bodies in that southern part of the school where African American students were.
Right. The name is Aaron Kimball. He's the one went out there and dug the bodies up, and but it was a joke to me because what she was doing, she's going all the way back to the. I would just laugh, and I told her, I said, you know, why would y'all go back in the 30s and boy's body is up there in the 50s? She said, well, we couldn't find them. I said, I guess not. They done fed them to the hogs and burned them up in that pit.
Wait a minute. Said, you're losing me, Reverend Gaddy. You helped me with this too, Richard. The boys that they were finding was mm-hmm. traced back to boys that had been there in the 30s?
Yeah.
Okay. So, go ahead.
I had a guy in the 30s. See, what we call the White House, he called it the ice cream factory, where he got whooped. But he say they used to shackle them. How old that guy was? 90? He dead now. He died about a year ago.
Okay.
He called it the ice cream. He said, man, it was cruel when I was there. He said they used to tie us down and whoop us. At least y'all got in and lay on the bed.
Now, that school, according to published reports, had been in existence for 111 years. As far as you know, Reverend Gaddy, were they always bringing young black boys there to that particular facility?
Always.
So this type of behavior, forced labor and killings, rapes, didn't just start when you were there. This had been a tradition for almost 100 years. So it's quite possible that it's maybe hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of bodies that he either been disposed of or buried in that 1,200-acre facility. Would you agree?
Because we've seen other graves that I actually did. I told her some places that was in there because she said, well, how do you know? I said, I was there. I said, we had a hog pen and never ate anything on the dirt. He ate on the concrete. And she come back and told me, she said, I saw that place you were talking about, the hog pen, all of it was concrete. I said, yeah. Did you see the sawmill? She said, yeah. I said, the swamp was right by the sawmill. Did you see it? She said, yeah. I said, I'll tell you something that you might not believe. She said, what? I said, we still left behind. You don't want to hear nothing we got to say.
And what they published in their report, which was released in 2016, was a which is called the Report on the Investigation into the Deaths and Burials at the former Arthur G. Dozer School of Boys in Marinette, Florida. They report of 100 deaths and 43 graves. And you're saying, Reverend Gaddy, that is definitely more, and they're more bodies as possible in that area, and Elliot, you know, traces it back even longer as far as the amount of bodies, the possible bodies. We can only speculate, but you did raise to her, Aaron Kimball, who has a PhD. You did raise to her that just for your experience, there had to be people more recent out of your era that was there that she hasn't even touched, or they haven't even touched.
Yeah, I think. Well, I talked to her not too long ago because we was all up in Tallahassee, And that's when they gave us apology. The senators in the House, they give us apology for what they ancestor did to us or something at the school. They apologized for it.
You know what? I do me a favor, Reverend Gaddy. Just put a pin in what you're saying there, because I want to go into that. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can join this conversation too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Our guest tonight, Reverend Johnny Lee Gaddy, the book They Told Me Not to Tell, which talks about the rapes, murders, and peonage at the Dozier School for Boys. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? If you realize that nobody's going to save black people but us, if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
No, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you want on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm going to go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
For an awakening. We're joined in conversation this evening with Reverend Johnny Lee Gaddy. The book They Told Me Not to Tell talks about the atrocities, rapes, murders, forced slavery, and peonage that went on at the so-called Dozier School for Boys in Florida. The name of the town escapes me, but it's not important, the name of the town. It's important what happened there to young black boys at this Dozier School for Boys. And you can join this conversation, too, if you have any questions for our guests by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832.
Before we go back to Reverend Gaddy.
Go ahead.
Read a section out of that report that they, in their general findings, that they, in dealing with the Dozier School that's in Marianna.
Okay.
As a result of this investigation, a record of nearly 100 deaths were found in historical documents, including boys aged 6 through 18 years and two adult staff members. These are deaths occurred from 1900 through 1973. However, state records regarding cases of death in school ledgers are only public record for the years prior to 1960. Therefore, the scope of this investigation was 1900 to 1960 for this period. Historical records indicate that 45 individuals were buried on the school grounds between the years 1914 and 1952. 31 bodies were shipped to other locations for burial, and 22 cases do not have record burial locations. There are also numerous references to unnamed boys that died with no other information available. Based on our research, we believe many, but not all of these boys were buried at Boot Hill. Not that Reverend Gaddy collaborates, but Reverend Gaddy provides that, you know, the broader scope, just based off of his experience, that they don't put in, that there had to be a lot more, especially, and they still just used in 1914.
You know,
the amount of deaths.
You know, Richard, and before we go back to, and bring Reverend Gaddy into the conversation. You can see here from that report that you read that they acknowledged that low number of deaths to young boys that they knew were at the school. But what about all the undocumented boys that went there? We just talked with Reverend Gaddy, and without any so-called due process, he went to that school. He went to that place. They picked him up for so-called truancy. He didn't see a judge. The next thing you know, come on, you going up here. So you know they didn't keep any official record of what was going. You know what I mean, Richard?
Yes.
If it was an influx of boys, according to Reverend Gaddy, coming there just about every day, you mean to tell me that young boys, five, average age, Reverend Gaddy said he's seen boys there 5 and 7 years old. You mean to tell me boys from 5 years old to just hypothetically say 13 or 14 is doing something that severe where they're coming there every day and they're keeping a record of this? I don't believe it was records kept of how many. It might make your head spin how many of our young boys lost their lives at that place.
Yes, it is. And never lose sight that we're talking about 1950, for Reverend Gaddy's experience, 1950s, and we're talking about state sponsor, and that the best they can do, and I'm glad you wanted to, before the break, wanted to follow up with Reverend Gaddy about his reflection or opinion about that they're providing, what is that that they call? An apology.
Yeah, I want to get into that. But Reverend Gaddy, you still with us?
I am.
Reverend Gaddy, talk about, because it's 57 when you went there, and you've seen a lot of atrocities go on to other children while you were there, to yourself as far as being raped. You got out of that place 5 years, so in 61 or 62, you were released. What happened? Talk about your release. What did they just come grab you out of the field one day and say, you're out of here, get out? Or what did they, what, tell us, walk us through that.
They called us, went to the college and told me you need to get your clothes. We're sending you back home. And they take me to the bus station, put me on the bus, send me back to Dade City.
And
just
when,
like that.
Just like that. And when you appeared home, did your mother say, I mean, was she shocked? Did she say, where you been? Or what happened?
Because they write letters to her from me.
Okay.
We write our own letters. They were writing letters about once or twice a month. But she was getting mail. She sent me money that I can get stuff from the canteen. But they just never did come to visit. And I was pretty angry when I got back with them. I was, because then nobody really believed I was telling the truth.
You're telling the truth about what? What you experienced there?
I was being treated. A lot of people in the neighborhood wouldn't let the kids play with it because they called us the more boys from the formatory school. Don't let the kid him because he'd been to the formatory school. He a bad kid. And I had to deal with that. So I kind of more or less isolated myself from my family. And then I got on the drug and alcohol. And it still didn't help.
Reverend Gaddy, the when you got back, did they? Now your education was disrupted. Number one, when you were 11, you went there, and it don't seem like it was much schooling going on there. It was a lot of forced labor and work. So when you got back, what happened? Did you try to go back to school, or did you just maybe got a job? What happened after that?
Just got a job and got my license and I retired sanitation driver 30, 25 years here in Florida. I worked in Ohio in a foundry. Every job that I ever had had to be a hard job, outside job. I didn't know how to read that well, but I could pick up on things pretty quick.
Okay.
And my daughter and my wife said, you might not gain read. And the boss man made me a lead supervisor over stick to some guy. He said, I got over 20,000 houses, and I can tell you to go to the first, and you can go, I tell you, go to the last, and you can go say that you're not dumb. And you keep more houses in your head than these guys can keep on paper. So them paper didn't destroy you. They had us on some kind of, they should have been helping us. We supposed to have been, when they spank us like that, they give us some kind of soup they call Dr. Seuss's soup to help our mind and keep them going crazy or something.
Wow. So, in essence, you were drugged. You received drugs there.
And he wasn't even a doctor. So he was a doctor. He wasn't even a doctor. Mr. Rail found that out.
Reverend Gaddy, after you, now I assume that Mr. Rail kind of helped you kind of piece things together, and this is years later, maybe 40, 50 years later, help you start trying to piece things together. Was this during the time maybe you reached out to some of the other men that were there with you at that time? Did you reach out to them before Mr. Rail kind of helped you, or you didn't know how to reach out to any of these men? Did she help you kind of get in contact with some of these other young boys? Well, they were older men by that time. But what happened in reference to that? Were you able to talk to some of the men that were there with you?
Well, it was two guys that was with me. We wrote a book together.
Okay.
But we kind of broke up. And the book we wrote with them was Dark Days of Horror. Mm-hmm. And they got crazy and we separated. But Mr. Rare helped us write that book.
Did any of the men, well, I know the answer to this, but I'll just ask it for the sake of our listening audience. Did any of the men ever get, did the state ever give any of these men psychological help for what they experienced there as young boys at a forced prison, labor camp, peonage camp?
No. All of them, like I say, all of them went to prison after they left that place. I asked quite a few guys.
Now, beside you, now, because I know maybe in private times when you were able to kind of have conversations with some of the other boys that were there, I'm quite sure you probably had boys there that might have stole an apple or something that was there for theft. But like I said before, you went there for truancy. So was it any other young boys that was there for basically minor, and I wouldn't even call it an offense, anything minor as such as truancy that spent 5 years in a peonage camp?
Yeah, one or two of them in there for jaywalking and one picking up, looking at a white woman, smoking cigarettes. We had a lot of guys in there for crazy stuff. I mean, it is unreal if they was to tell you the why they was there.
Reverend Gaddy, you said that Mr. Rill made arrangements and you all went to the Capitol, did you say, and they issued apologies to some of the men that are still with us that haven't passed away. The state issued go ahead.
There's an organization called the White House Board.
Okay.
They We all met in Tallahassee. The White House boy's been fighting it for about 10 years.
Now, those are not necessarily boys that were there when you were there. It was boys that was there for different periods of time.
Some of them was there when I was there, and some there after. And they all, it's an organization they call the White House Boys, and they was more or less talking about what the white boys experienced. And Mr. Rao was pushing the black guy.
Okay.
And I got to be a part of them because they would had called me to go around some of the black guys died. I go to Daytona in some area and preach the funeral for them because some of the parents wanted a black guy to do the funeral. They know me, so I go up there and preach the funeral for them.
Okay. So, who issued the apologies?
The Senate.
The state senators.
State senators in the House was the House. House of Representatives.
Now, they issued an apology. Was it any reparations behind this apology?
None.
Was it any criminal investigations? For these, not only the people that inflicted the punishments and the beatings and the murders on some of these young boys, but you had people that were in charge of those facilities. Did anybody ever pay, and when I say pay, I'm talking about imprisoned behind what was going on there? Nobody.
There's a statute of limitation that ran out.
I didn't know it was. Oh, go ahead.
I think one guy that was doing his spanking in there in Tidwell, he's the one of them. He's the only one that's still alive that they know of.
So he is alive?
Mm-hmm.
He's
still in Marana.
And now what about the black guy that was there doing the same thing?
He's dead. You got a record of him dead.
Okay, all right.
I have to ask Reverend Yadin, and maybe, and because this question about apology, state apology, I think we heard Clinton make an apology for the Tuskegee experiment. We hear, you know, we hear apologies all over, and maybe for me a little bit more distant in relationship to how I might see it. But you went through this experience up to actually hearing them present this apology, if it's not uncomfortable to you. Can how does that sit with you, that after all of this, seeing all this, knowing all this, holding back and not telling anyone for all this time, that in a state sponsor, from a state-sponsored institution, that what you get is an apology. How does that sit with you?
Not good at all. I'm not taking just an apology. I'm still gonna fight them. Because they put a little monument in Capitol building with some of the fallen boys. And they gave $1.2 million for that. And they paid Miss Erin Kimmel for the digging of the body. And I guess the living don't supposed to get anything.
Wait a minute. They paid $1.2 million for a monument.
Right.
Now, did that monument, were it the black boys or they showed white boys on the monument? Okay, so they paying $1.2 million for a monument. They're paying for the excavation of these bodies, but no money allocated for the people that experienced this.
Now, I do see a report where Rick Scott and that legislator, the governor, pushed through a bill, SB 708, where they're going to give $7,500 for the burial of those remains that professor uncovered. So still, to Reverend Gaddy's point, for those who are living, who went through the experience, who provided profit to production to the economy of Florida at the time, they get nothing.
Reverend Gaddy, you know, this story, it needs to be told. I'm glad that you wrote two books on it, because I think it's kind of giving you a release to the atrocities that you experienced and went through. You were blessed to have your family, your wife there with you, to keep you grounded. You mentioned that you had went on your alcohol and all for a while there, and I'm quite sure, you might not be aware of it, but I'm quite sure it was other young boys that experienced those things at that prison camp, labor, the slavery camp, peonage camp that it took them under. That either they lost their life with drugs, alcohol, or they might have went crazy. But I think it was a blessing that you were able to have your family there, your wife, your eventual children that you had, to keep you grounded and help you make it through. And then you ran into Miss Aurel to kind of put the pieces back together for you. I'm just happy that you were able to keep it together so you could tell this story and get this story out. It needs to be told. Our people need to know what happened. Hopefully some African-American lawmakers that are in the state of Florida, which is a lot of them there, kind of get behind this, to get the men that were beaten, maimed at this White House down there, to get them some type of reparations, or at least get their story out there. Because if this happened to any other nationality, Jews or anybody else, they'd be screaming to the high heavens until their elders were compensated for what they went through. And that's just, you know, what I have to say on this. Before we leave tonight, Reverend Gaddy, anything that you want to say to our listening audience in reference to maybe what they can do, if they can write letters, if you want them to, because they can purchase the book and read the stories about what went on. But you tell the people what you want them to know.
Exactly. We at a point right now, we got one more meeting with the in Tallahassee, so we got to wait and find out what direction they going with that. But I'm more or less following Ms. Arell Lee. I'm not, like I told a guy when I was in, they had 137 councilmen, what do you call them, representatives approved it, and they stood up and applauded us. They had all us to stand that was there. They give us an applause. You know, I tell people I'm glad I did it, because we got so many young girls. I still cry. I cry every day. I cry every day because so many people don't believe this stuff is really happening to their daughters, or when they being molested, their son being molested. And I tell people all the time, you got a baby, and you send that baby to a babysitter. and that baby come back flinching, you need to check it out because something is wrong. And they got to pay closer attention to everything. Because all they doing is sending men to prison. They come out worse than they went in. All they doing make, I tell them all the time, they got us in these motels, projects. All they doing, if you take dogs and put them in a pen, all they do is fight. And I stress to these young men, you know, there's a better way. I thank God for a strong wife and daughter. Okay. I didn't know how to love my own kids. I didn't know how to tell them I love them.
Okay.
I love them. I couldn't tell them. But until I find out, I'll get back with you.
Well, we're going to be in touch with Miss Arell to give us updates and you know, to what's going on in reference to the men that were that suffered these atrocities down there at the Dozier School for Boys. Richard, go ahead, Reverend Gaddy.
I have my daughter to give it to you if you don't mind.
Hi, you can purchase his book at Gaddy, G-A-D-D-Y, 1945, at gmail.com. That's PayPal. And yes. The book is...
Now say that twice for me.
Mm-hmm. It's Gaddy, G-A-D-D-Y, 1945, mm-hmm. at gmail.com. And you can get that through PayPal with that email address. And with the shipping and handling, and I think it comes out at $18 with the shipping and handling. The book is $14.95. Mm-hmm. Or you can go on Amazon.com and order it.
Okay.
And thank you. And thank you and your father for the courageous spirit that y'all have. And being able to, which I think is always most important for us when we hear true stories of our experience, for to recognize that it's real families that who are telling us and actually transferring that experience to us so that we can actually continue that torch, be the torchbearers of what is necessary to understand and what is necessary to do. In this case, for your family and for Reverend Gaddy, is to be able to purchase that book, They Told Me Not to Tell. And you said at G-A-D-D-Y, 1945, at Gmail or on Amazon.
Yes, sir. Yeah, also he didn't mention it, but the government system, it was like a plot because the sheriff's department was involved and then the government, the county, because they used the judges, the police, and the local cities to send these boys to Mariana.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't the state. It was a whole big conspiracy.
Yeah, that's why when your dad told us that they brought them there and a lot of state senators and whatever, you know, issued an apology. Mm-hmm. It was a government conspiracy to do this to young black boys, to commit these atrocities for a period of almost 100 years. So it really is incredible the amount of young men that might have lost their life at that place.
Right.
I mean, wow. You know, I thank Miss Arell when she was on our program for making us aware of your dad's story. And I'm going to reach out to her to kind of keep us abreast of what's going on, because this story needs to be out there. It needs to be told. I see that they made an article about it in the Atlanta Black Star, where a lot more people can read about what has happened. And I want to thank you and your dad for being with us this evening.
Thank you.
Reverend Gaddy, we'll be in touch, sir.
Have a blessed day. say, and it's good to hear somebody concerned to hear the story.
Thank you, sir. And we'll be back after a brief break. We'll be in open forum the rest of the way, so you can give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our story.
Let's buy black365.com.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? If you realize that nobody's going to save black people but us, if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com. antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. Live streaming podcasts and broadcasts at timeforanawakening.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We'll be in open form the rest of the way. You can get involved by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. And I want to thank again our guest that was with us this evening, Reverend Johnny Lee Gaddy. The book They Told Me Not to Tell, about the atrocities, the rapes, murders, the peonage that was going on at the Dozier School for Boys. And I use that school for boys very loosely. At Dozier, I put it that way. Richard, your words just can't express when you hear these type of things. It's different if you're reading historical accounts and your mind kind of goes back to whatever was going on with some of our ancestors. It's bad enough. But when you hear stuff like this from an elder now that experienced this type of stuff, It's unbelievable. And when I say unbelievable, it's unbelievable that people with some modicum of power or the semblance of power don't do anything about this. And I gave an example. If something like this happened to somebody that is Jewish, this would be all over all the halls of Congress, Senate, everything else, until some type of satisfaction was given to the people that suffered these atrocities at a state-sponsored school that was given state money, that had young boys there. And I'm not talking about grown men. These were young boys. Slave labor camp. Reverend Gaddy said it was the boys there 5-7 years old when they had them on the two-man saw. The one boy couldn't even push the saw back. He was so small.
Mm-hmm. And we hear the stories of the chain gangs and we think that is something we see for some of us, it may be something we see on television, unless we have as even, you know, Reverend Gaddy's daughter helped us making it clear that it is, when we say state, we got to make sure we understand this is from the sheriff, the judge.
Yeah,
the
she said boys was coming up from all over. Listen, when Reverend Gaddy said, Richard, that they were being brought there every day, I know they wasn't just coming from his town. Mm-hmm. They had to be coming from all over.
And it's a part of our total system. And Elliot, if I can I add more, a little more detail out of this report that reemphasizes who and giving some meat to this point, because I think it's really like important that, and they discover it, right? They, like here we have Reverend Gaddy telling us, telling them. I mean, he still has to. He still, as he was telling us, people didn't believe, wasn't believing him. You know what I mean? Like, I'm experiencing this. I'm trying to process that, LA. Here, I have experienced something, and I'm telling you something horrific that I experienced, but you're not even listening to me. And even now, in my elder age, you're going to give me a academic report. And I'm telling you, that still isn't flushing out from just what I have experienced. And then you still can get $1 million to do it or can get paid to do it, but I can't get compensated for unjustly being placed in a circumstance that affects my life, affects my relationship with my children, with my wife, affects my relationship with my community, that I can't even be compensated other than from a perspective of saying, I apologize. We apologize. Something's wrong with that.
Oh, I know it is. You know what? That, you know, you hear horrible things. Like, listen, I loved my dad. And if I knew that my dad had suffered atrocities like that, and I knew that one of the guys that did that to him was still walking around, he said that that one guy, the one-armed white guy that was still around. Mm. The black guy had a black guy doing it. Mm. I'm quite sure he was under instructions, but it doesn't matter. He was assisting this white guy in torturing these young boys. Mm. He said he pulled the skin off his body. They beat him so hard with their whip. And then sent him in there with the other boys in the eating so all of them could see him all bloody. Come got him and took him to town. Took him to town and had and then raped.
Yeah.
He said he then told his wife that type of stuff until later on he had the courage. After Miss Arell helped him, he had the courage to admit to his wife that this type of stuff happened to him. At some damn school for boys. A peonage camp.
And that's 1950.
He said he was there from 57 to 62 when they let him go back for truancy. He didn't go to school. That's something that you get. I'm just pulling from my experience. You might get suspended for if they catch you. And then you go back to school. Your mother brings you back to school and you get reinstated. That ain't nothing you go to a peonage camp for and spend 5 years there under atrocities. Seeing young boys' bodies and thrown in the hog pens.
And they talk about children, the traumatization of children today.
This man said, Richard, you heard him say after they let him, oh, first they came, got him out the field, okay, you're out of here. Gave him a bus ticket and let him go back home. After 5 years and being in a peonage camp. From 11, then he went home, I guess he was about 16. Mm-hmm. No schooling, no nothing. He said he went on alcohol for a while there, I think. Did he mention drugs?
Yes.
Mm. I'm surprised the man kept any type of sanity at all. Boy, I'm telling you, and this man, boy, and our people ask for reparations, and you got people like these, like the two clowns that was running for president, Hillary Clinton and that old fool talking about they don't want to talk about it. That's bullshit. And excuse the expression to the listening audience. When you hear stories like this, man, you can understand why Nat Turner and Denmark Vesey and a lot of the men did what they did. People are animals. The hell, you got kids, children there going through that type of stuff, and the state know it, making money off of them, clearing out swamps. The man said it was gators and all, rattlesnakes and all. They bite the children. Okay, we'll take them to the hospital. He said they never seen them again. He said he know they didn't make it to no hospital. Because if they made it to a hospital, Richard, then they would have to explain how these children got hurt. They ain't take them to no hospital. They probably end up in that hog pen where he said he saw body parts. This is incredible. We got a couple calls on here. We got some minutes left in the program. Let's take a couple of these callers. 215 area code. What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hey, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. What's up, my brothers? How y'all doing?
How you doing, Jeff?
Yeah, I thought I was be calling y'all from the shores, but I wasn't able to make it down tonight. So it's, you know, that's here the day though. But anyway, oh, I don't even know where to begin, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. I listened to your guest the last. Like the last half hour of interview with him, and I tell you, man, it was just it was riveting. To say it was riveting, Elliot and Richie, would be an understatement, man. You know.
And he wasn't talking about nothing that happened, and you know, when our people were in bondage, physical bondage. Mm-hmm. This is something 1957 when they mm-hmm. came to his mother's house and took him out of his mother's house. Without any so-called due process, took him to the county jail first, and he said he stayed there so long he fell asleep. He said when they woke him up and said, okay, we going. He said, where we going? He said, nigga, you know, wherever they took him to that Dozier school. And then that's where the peonage started.
Remember, Ella, that's 1957. That's 2 years after Emmett Till's brutal murder.
Exactly. And see, that, you know, when I talked to him about his mother, you know, he said his father had passed. It was 13 mm-hmm. of them. So I know, you know, his mother was grown. I know she wasn't going to object when that sheriff came there. She was almost in a situation where what could she do?
Right. I understand. Oh, I understand what you're saying. And see, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, see, this is why, as a student of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and stuff, you know, that's why I love the message. He said the white man is the devil. He knew exactly what he was talking about. Negroes, they can get upset all they want. Like I say, Negroes, if you ever notice, Ellen Richard, black people, men and women, and even to a certain degree on the terrestrial radio station, they get more upset when you call the white man a devil. Because the white man, even on the devil stations, when I've called over the years and I called a white man a devil, most white people don't get upset. If you think I'm lying, I can play back some of the tapes. You get an ignorant Negro call in and say, I disagree with that brother Joe. I mean, with that Joe from Germantown, he called white people devils. I'm a black man. I don't agree. They say that to the white people. White people don't never call a challenge because they know who they are. They know their nature. It's always the Negroes that's want to be the defenders and stuff. White people know who they are. They ain't got no problem with that. And see, this is why I have an issue when I heard people, Negroes especially was in the military, and even if some of the Negroes they jump up and they wave the flag, you know, on these bogus holidays like this one coming up Memorial Day, 4th of July. When they get up in Thompson, we got to fight for their freedom. We got to fight for people's freedoms. Or we want to thank the United States military for fighting to keep us free. We want to go over to Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever and fight the free people. Hey, over here in this country that you call America, they can do something like this to children. See, that is always flabbergasted when Negroes can see, look all the way overseas and see what Saddam Hussein is doing or what the president of China is doing, and these devils can do stuff to you right up in your nose. Y'all dumb niggas act like you don't see a damn thing, you know? It's amazing, man. It is amazing. They can always tell me what somebody else is doing over there. This white man is kicking up your ass every day. He got you talking about human rights violation. What is more of a human rights violation than what Brother Gaddy went through, as well as what our people going through in Flint, Michigan? Anytime you got a population, Elliot and Richard, drinking contaminated water, and these children, many of them, they already predict they're going to be wrong for life. If that ain't a human rights violation, I don't know what a damn human rights violation is.
Yeah, well, not only that, and then the state wanted them to still pay a water bill.
Was the LM, sorry.
The state wants them to still pay the water bill.
I know. Just like out in Ferguson, our people getting railroaded, the fill the city coffers and stuff. That's why I say that's what Alvin Elijah Muhammad said. Just what he said, the Negro need a checkup from the neck up. He's dumb, deaf, and blind. And that's not to put down our people, but it's the truth. If we ever gonna move forward, we gotta admit that we some of us are mentally dead. We have to wake up. That's why your show is apropos. Time for an awakening. Some people have got to be woken up, man. This is what happened to Brother Gotti. That didn't happen in China. Didn't happen in Cuba. Didn't happen in Russia. Happened in good old U.S. of A. I mean, when Flint, Michigan didn't happen over, it happened right here in America. When Philando Castile and Alton, the brother, I forgot his last name, out in Louisiana, and Eric Garner, when all them brothers were murdered by these devils, that didn't happen overseas. It happened right over here in the good old U.S. of A., you know? I mean, these devils is killing you left and right. They got your people drinking poison water, and Negroes can talk about some, whoa, Saddam Hussein, he killing his own people. Gaddafi killing his people. The Negroes is so stupid, I tell you. It's just a... Oh, man, I tell you, sometimes it makes you just want to puke sometimes, the mentality of these Negroes, man. You know? These devils doing all kinds of stuff to you right in front of your face, openly doing stuff. They didn't hide it, openly doing it. And now that they're dumb with it in the White House now, they openly, you know, white people became more bold with their race than they, before they were trying to, you know, say it in closed quarters or say it in cold words. Now these bigots come around out and calling you niggas and stuff like that. More white people have showed their white ass since Trump been elected. They get more and more bold with their race until to a brother knock the hell out of one of them. Then they'll put them back in their place, male and female alike. But they think they're getting bold. See, Trump gave these little devils some heart now. They think they can come out bold now. They ain't got that sugarcoat. They ain't got a speaking code. They can come right on out with this stuff now, you know. And that's the mindset you're dealing with now. You know, but I mean, just again, I let you go with this one, Elliot. Like I said, man, I wish people that want to rest the radio station here in Philadelphia could have heard Brother Gotti's story just now. Because if that don't touch your heart and don't make you cry and shed tears, I don't think nothing else will, man. To know that he was treated like that by his own so-called government or state government of these United States, man. Wow. I mean, that is just wow. I mean, like you said, children being bit by rattlesnakes, gators. I mean, it's just insane the stuff to know that what these people have done and capable of doing. But then I let last point, Ellen Richard, why should we be shocked? You go back to our times in chattel slavery. It was not uncommon for the white slave masters to rip babies out of our women's mothers' wombs and take the babies, in some cases, throw them to the gators.
Yeah.
So we know that's their nature. I mean, that's their nature. The white man is he's the devil yesterday. He the devil today, and he gonna damn sure be the devil tomorrow.
And it's just such a systemic thing, and I think that we, you know, because especially when we start talking about how this, you know, and I'm calling it a buzzword, you know, catching of a prison industrial complex that is a part of our language today, you know, that these kind of, it's how, that it is systemic, and again that the whole thing of corporate involvement in prison labor, that is mm-hmm. something that's going on today. So that we don't, what Reverend Gotti gave us was to, you know, a story of millions of stories that we need to, as you're saying, become just sensitized by becoming aware of, so we don't think that it's an aberration more than that. This is just this is business as usual.
Yes,
it's
it is
business from the beginning, and it's business now. And if we look at it any way differently, then it's something, you know, it's something ain't right with that picture. That's all
I concur with you, brother Ray, I don't have no comeback on what you just said. I mean, what you said is apropos, man, and I just, you know, thank you and Brother Elliot for giving me the time, man, and y'all brothers, you know, I can't even honestly say have a good night. I mean, how can you have a good night after hearing something like
that? After hearing that, I know it.
Exactly. All I can say to y'all brothers, I hope y'all brothers can try to get some rest and, you know, whatever the best you can in the circumstances. Hearing something like that, it does something to you, man. I mean, unless you're an unfeeling person or have no kind of sense of feelings or empathy or humaneness about you. How could you say have a good night? All I can say that, like I said, y'all brothers in closing, I hope y'all brothers can some way, you know, get some rest and have some kind of peace of mind at night, because that's something like that does something to you, man. It sticks with you, Elliot and Richard, you know. And I just, you know, thank y'all brothers for the time. Thanks.
Thank you for the call, Joe.
You're welcome, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard.
Let's grab one more here before we leave. 646.
Brother Elliot, Brother Richard.
How are you, sir?
The white man is the goddamn devil. Is that what they say? They call him Yaku. Mm-hmm. You know, now some of our African brothers call him the Yorugu. Mm-hmm. What you need to call him is a filthy, no good, stinking bastard. That's what he is. He's worthy of only one thing, being put in the ground. You know, to do these type of things, which our people really don't understand, Brother Elliot, is it was going on all in the South. That, what happened to that brother? He wasn't the only one that it happened to. It happened in basically every state in the South. And that's something that we don't even talk about. We don't address. We don't tell our children about it. We don't do none of the necessary things to inform our people about how really downright wicked this white man is. And that's the tragedy. Because as you see, we always looking to integrate ourselves into his absolute madness. I mean, you know, look at what happened at Bethune-Cookman College. Mm-hmm. The Negro invites a known racist, a known nitwit, someone who doesn't know anything about education other than how she could economically pimp it.
To speak to our children.
Yeah, to speak to our children and hope that she will give the college some money or maybe give his black ass a job. Which she's going to do neither one of those things. The psycho told them that he thinks giving money to the black colleges is illegal. And he's looking into it. I mean, what are we going to learn in regards to who and what this white man is? I mean, you know, do we have to constantly fulfill the rest of our lives under the impression that this white man is such a great individual?
It's becoming
absolutely sickening, if all truth be told, in our mental psychosis.
Well,
something really, really wrong with us.
Well, Jay, let me say this in reference to what you're saying and what Joe said. At this stage now, the problem, see, we already know about the European mentality and how they've been dealing with us since we've been here. The problem is now, what you just expressed and what Reverend Gaddy expressed earlier, and I'll tie it in, you just expressed about DeVos, or Bessie DeVos, or whatever, being invited to Bethune-Cookman to talk to our young people. Now, the students didn't invite her. Somebody else black invited her and brought her there to talk to our children, our young people. The young people turned their back on her, which was good. They showed a little more heart and sense than the adults that invited her. But I want to tie that in to what Reverend Gaddy was saying. The abuses that was going on to young children at this peonage camp with the name Doja School for Boys, but nobody was doing any learning there. It might have been learning on the white side, but on the black side, it wasn't nothing but slavery, rape, and murder. He said that it was a black guy over there beating the daylights out of them, too, along with whites.
Oh, no.
That's the problem. Nowadays, that's the problem. These blacks that's colluding with Europeans to abuse, to take advantage of black, need to be called out on the carpet. No more can we protect these people. Call them out. It's a lot of Stevens, like that movie was, Django. It's a lot of Stevens that we got to deal with. They got to be dealt with.
Let me, Let me tell you something, Elliot. I'll never forget this in my life. I was working for New York City Transit. This was maybe 20-some years ago. And it was this brother who was basically, I think he was drunk. He got into it with the officer. The officer called the 1013. And when they call the 1013, they come as quick as quick. Now, they got up there. The guy was on the ground. They had him basically under control. Do you know the Puerto Rican and the Negro came up there and stomped on him? And the white folks just stood there and looked at these two dumbasses like, what the hell is wrong with these two jackasses? You know what I mean? I'll never forget that image in my life. They just ran up the stairs and just started wailing on the brother. Didn't find out what was going on. They saw that it was under control. But they had to go and put some licks on that brother to show their white daddy that they basically, I guess, had their back. It was one of the most disgusting sights I ever saw in my life. It was heartbreaking. You know what I mean? And the white man, people just stood there and looked at them like, what the F is wrong with these two clowns? You know what I mean? And this is the nature of most of these Negroes and Negro peens that we're dealing with today. And it's absolutely tragic. We are in a position now that we do more currying for the acceptance of this devil than we do for our own acceptance and love for one another. Do you know, if you look at totally, honestly, the direction that we're going into, we're trying to get closer and closer and closer to this filthy, no-good, sticking cracker than we ever have in our total existence. Even when you had the Negro that was enslaved looking to get in the master's house to do a little better, they wasn't behaving like some of these Negroes are today. It's absolutely tragic. It's sick. It's disgusting. And I'm telling you something. We better wake up, because eventually the daddy is going to say, okay, Negroes, we have no more use for you. And when that happens, what are them Negroes going to do? They're not going to behave like the African did when the white man said, we are no longer your slave master, and try to build, you know, our own towns, our own institutions and all of those things. They're going to be at an absolute loss, because they don't have that type of spirit to do that. Because if they did, we wouldn't be in the condition that we're in right now, because we basically have a grasp of every form of technology there is today to build our own institutions and to sustain ourselves. There's nothing in this world or in this country that the black man can't do. But he don't want to do, because he loves his daddy. He loves his daddy more than he loves his African self. You know what I mean? And then think about this. All of those kids that graduated, well, the majority of those kids that graduated from Bethune-Cookman, who are they going to run to get a job? The daddy. Now, mind you know the daddy got some of their pictures. You know the daddy is going to not give them jobs when they see, well, I graduated from Bethune-Cookman, because the daddy going to think that those Negroes was a part of it. How are the Negroes going to prove that they didn't get up and turn their back to the white mammy? You know what I mean? You know that's the nature of the white man. The white man is going to see Bethune-Cookman, and he's going to say, oh, this may have been one of those Negroes who acted their ass. You know what I mean? I mean, it's sad to say, but it's real. But last thing is this. If the white man don't realize now that this crackpot in the White House is a real dangerous sick cracker, then I don't know what it's going to take. He's one of the best liars and con men that the world has absolutely ever produced. Now he's talking about, and this is what I'm really enjoying, the fact that he may suspend daily briefings, or if he don't, he may do them his damn self. That's just a fact. Imagine that cracker every day doing the daily briefing. I don't think about it. What type of entertainment would that be, brother? I mean, it's funny. can't even think about it. That cracker talking to the press every day. But, you know, I hope, Elliot, that the press start to behave like men and women to protect the interests of the daddy. They're not protecting the interests of the daddy, Elliot. I'm sorry to say it. They're not protecting their white mama and their white daddy's interests. No, no. They're letting their bastard stepchildren and other offspring run amok and keeping society at a certain decorum. And that's really, really tragic. You know what I mean? I don't know if you ever take an opportunity to look at Morning Joe. But, oh, let me tell you something. Them are some interesting Neanderthals. Because that white man there, he is absolutely at his wit's end seeing what Donald Trump is doing to his Republican Party and to the nation. I think it may be a possibility that that cracker may slit his wrist. And I'm hoping that he will. Okay. I want to see the cracker crack up on the air. That's what I'm waiting for a total mental breakdown in regards to what are you doing. You remember the movie Network, I think it was, where the announcer at some point in time bugged out, I think it was. Mm-hmm. I think that was the movie Network.
Network,
well, I'm
yeah.
waiting for that. I'm waiting for that cracker one day to just absolutely lose his mind because of what this Neanderthal is doing. You know what I mean? I mean, the man is so gangster that he's going to tell James Comey, if you start running your mouth, I may release some tape. Now, how in God's earth are you that gangster that you think you're going to intimidate an FBI man? Do you know what the FBI and CIA are doing, punk ass? He don't really recognize what could happen to him, I don't think. He ain't bulletproof.
Yeah.
At some point in time, I really think they're going to make an example out of this Neanderthal knuckle dragon, and I can't wait for the day it happens, Elliot, because it's going to be a beautiful thing, because them bulldog, dumb white trash, they're going to be absolutely devastated when that devil, you know, gets his due. I give it another 8 to 14 months if he keep on behaving like the Neanderthal he is, because I think people getting sick of his shit, and he causing too much problem. But as always, Brother Elliot, man, you got a fantastic show. You're the best radio host, I must say, other than my brother Keedy, at what you do. What you do, Elliot, my man, honestly, no one do it like you. I think you and my boy, old Al, that used to be in Philly, I like Al Butler. I used to get a kick out of him when he wasn't on his integration nonsense. You know what I mean? But really, Carl Nelson is pretty good. But when it comes down to a radio host, Elliot, you at the top of the list, baby. You nobody doing like you.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Well, thanks for that, Jay. But I don't know whether I necessarily agree with that myself.
No, nobody. Who do you think is better than you, Elliot?
Well, I don't want to. I ain't going to get in his head.
I mean, who do you listen to that you... I know the all-time favorite of mine that I learned so much from and got me into talk radio was Bob Law.
Okay.
Because I used to work at night, and I used to listen to him at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning beat up on a cracker, and it was the most beautiful thing because the way that he beat up on the cracker, I've never seen anybody do it like that. So he's my number one all-time host. But you, Brother Elliot, the more I listen and I enjoy you, your interviewing skills are par excellence, brother. And that's not to hype you up, man. You are good. And I hope people recognize how good you are. Imagine you had the platform that Civil Tone, Perm Daddy Coon, Al Sharpton had. Imagine what our people would learn if you was in that position that Coon is in. But listen, brother, I'll be looking forward to Sunday. Elliot, please keep up the good work. The ancestors sent you down to us to make us proud and to educate us. And you're doing a hell of a job, brother.
Jay, thank you for your call, man.
All peace. Right.
Richard, look like we're winding up another program, man.
Yes, we are, and a good one at that.
Yeah, wow. You know, I agree with what Joe was saying before he left here. You know, you really, after hearing that story, man, it'll affect you. And I haven't even read the book, but wow. Yeah. It's a blessing, and I'll repeat it again on the air. It's a blessing that Reverend Gaddy was able to keep his sanity.
Yes.
After experiencing that at such a young age, and then had to go on with his life afterwards. He said he was shunned by a lot of the people in the town, and I think he said it's some of his family. Did he say some of his family?
Yeah, right. But, yeah. You know, Elliot, by having Dr. Robitaille on last and speaking about the spirituals, you know, and just that period, and then hearing Reverend Gaddy, you know, the connection of just to the point that you're speaking of the spirit we have that keeps us in spite of that, you know, it's you know, that's what we have to continue to celebrate. And that's why I really believe it's important that we find all the Reverend Gaddy's stories, not as, yes, it's about that, you know, to feel that, but in that is the lesson of what we have that in spite of that, I state emphatically, you know, cannot be taken away. And that we have to celebrate it, we have to continue to demonstrate it, and we have to be able to, you know, show it, not just within our personal lives, but in our collective lives. I think that that's really so important to do, and it's so great to hear, the stories of Reverend Gaddy, not because of the suffering of it, but because, as you said, the triumphs that we can be able to show an individual, what we can do as individuals, therefore what we can do as a people, and what we have been doing as a people.
Yeah, I agree. Again, Reverend Gaddy's daughter left the email. If our listening audience wants to read the accounts, the book is called "They Told Me Not to Tell." Reverend Johnny Lee Gaddy's experience there at the Dozier School for Boys from 57 to 61. Go to gaddy1945@gmail.com. Just send that email again to gaddy1945@gmail.com to get more information on how to get the book. And I think she said it was also available on Amazon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back, Lord willing, on Sunday to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving.